Hey, Bill Nye, the Science Guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deedy, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
Yes, I am a sound scientist. Came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
Hey, this is Jess.
And this is Todd.
And you're listening to The Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association. Humanism, according to kidswithoutgod.com, is a philosophy that rejects supernaturalism and stresses an individual's dignity and worth and capacity for self-realization through reason.
Nice. I hear Darwin the dog is a humanist.
Darwin the dog is a humanist. And so I mentioned Kids Without God, Todd, and that's a new campaign that the AHA is launching, trying to reach the millions of those young free thinkers in the world who might need a safe place on the web to get information that isn't biased by religion. So we've launched an ad campaign sending kids to our website called kidswithoutgod.com. And there's a teen website and a kids website. And so Darwin the dog is sort of the mascot for the little kids website. And he is a humanist, and he talks about what that means to him in the first section called Meet Darwin of little.kidswithoutgod.com. Pretty cool.
It says here, Darwin is a humanist. He believes in being a good person, even though he doesn't believe in any of the gods from his stories, and even though he's not actually a person. I personally think it's awesome. I mean, you go to the kids site, and I've got young kids, and boy, oh boy, is it not hard to come across lots and lots of material about Christianity and why Christianity is great and why they should follow Jesus, but not a whole lot about secular values and what humanists believe. And, you know, my wife, who's a Christian, and I are, both teach our kids what we believe. She has an enormous advantage in that there's a lot more materials out there that have been prepared for Christians and the children of Christians. And so I'm looking forward to showing my kids this stuff and letting them process the information and make the decisions for themselves. They don't have to be a humanist, but I think it's great for them to have more educational materials out there. And heck, I've read them the Bible before, or at least pieces of it. So I think it'd be a good next step to read them pieces of this as well. And, you know, then once they get to be teenagers, there's tons and tons of stuff on the teens page for the Kids Without God campaign and all sorts of things that they may want to know about. Or many times it's many things that the religious fundamentalists don't want them to know about, like the parts of the Bible about killing and the parts about how the Pledge of Allegiance has only been sin addition, and all these little things that they try to hide or have tried to remove from public school curriculums. It's kind of the things they don't want you to know, but kids might actually want to know about and probably should know about, you know, like evolution. I personally think it's a fantastic campaign and a good long-term resource.
Right. Well, good. That's our goal, Todd. That's our goal. Well, I'm really excited for our show this month, Todd. We have two members of the three-man show called The Evolution of Comedy Tour, Intelligently Designed Humor. So we're speaking with Ian Harris and Jason Resler. And they're just funny and they're smart and it's refreshing, and I really think that our listeners are going to enjoy this.
Yeah, what's pretty cool about both of them is that they've both been ranked before in the list of top 100 comedians. So it goes to show, you know, these guys have some good credentials and have been around a while and have had CDs and shows on Sirius XM. And Ian's actually got a big comedy special coming up. So yeah, these are good quality comedians, and I think you will very much enjoy the segment.
Okay, listeners, we're here with Ian Harris and Jason Resler. So you guys are presenting a show called The Evolution of Comedy Tour, Intelligently Designed Humor. Why don't you, first of all, it's awesome and I love it and it sounds great and I can't wait to see it. Can you just give us a little idea of what it's about?
Yeah, I mean, the entire show is meant to be
sort of a rational discussion of subjects that most people look at irrationally. So it's sort of skepticism or free thought based comedy. But we do also a lot of stuff about politics. So it's kind of half politics, half skepticism.
That's awesome.
The politics part of it, you know, it's watching the news skeptically. How people, you know, I mean, hey, if you're getting your news source, if your news source is taking money from large corporations and banks, well, their news stories could possibly, you know, have a twist to their advantage. You know, you can't sell a comedy special to Showtime if you do a joke about Coca-Cola, because Showtime has advertising deals with Coca-Cola and so on. You know, for years I've played the casino markets like Reno, Nevada, and whatnot. And in those little rag weekly newspapers that give all the people, the ideas of what to do for their entertainment, after being in the business, you start to find out and realize that the pick of the week wasn't actually some journalist going out and watching all of the shows that are available and deciding, oh, this is what. No, the pick of the week is bought and paid for. That's an advertisement, just the way a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame is. So, of course, it's the same way with news. And
So as you can see, Jason does more of the politics side.
So wait a minute, Jason, what you're saying is the news is not objective. Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. Journalism is a lost, if not dead art.
Well, unless, of course, it's Fox News, then it's fair and balanced.
Absolutely. We were just fortunate enough to interview Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, and I would say they're objective. I like that. They report the truth.
You know, the thing is that that's the thing.
I'm a fan. Yeah.
We're starting to find, you know, although as much as you need to be skeptical, of course, about what you read on the internet and what you see on the internet, at least it's out there that if somebody wants to do something, that they're objective, I guess, that you have that format now, you have that medium to actually do something different and do it on your own and build your own fan base. And that is the cool thing about the internet nowadays.
Yeah. The democratization of and I guess news, of humor, of music. It's kind of cool.
Original source and see if the people are completely reporting the news and things along. Yeah. They're awfully helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that's the biggest thing which is what we're trying to do partly with the show is, you know, a lot of times when we go to colleges and stuff, we don't even say skepticism, or we just say we're promoting critical thinking, because I think that's the biggest issue. I mean, I actually heard that there was, I don't know how much this is true. I mean, I've seen a little bit about it, but that there are actually some politicians who have specifically said in their platforms that we need to do away with with critical thinking in schools. It's like, really? We need to do away with critical. But that's the thing, is if people just think critically and you just care about where your evidence comes from and you care about what evidence you have, then, and you check your sources, and then you check your sources and do some background check. Yeah. You're never going to know you probably won't know the full truth ever. And there's always going to be some bias here and there, but if you do enough of that, you can basically get a good understanding of what's fact and what's not. And I think that's the biggest thing, you know, and we still see that. And that's the downside of the internet, I think, is that, you know, somebody posts a meme on Facebook, and it's like, you know, 1 in 5 Americans, you know, hate babies. And then it's like, all of a sudden people start going around, you know, I read a fact that 1 in 5 Americans hate babies. It's like, well, no, you read a Facebook meme. You didn't actually. And we go by these little sound bites, and that's how Fox News and it seems like the right, that they come up with these cool little slogans and these sound bites. And then, and I'm recognizing them more and more, because people who don't agree with me come up after shows, or my friends who we're speaking with, you know, I'm talking with them, and I'll find that 2 or 3 or 4 people say the exact same thing
right
within a couple days of each other. And then I started realizing, wait a second, these people are saying the exact same sound bite that they heard from the exact same newscast.
It's easy to know what Rush Limbaugh is talking about without listening to his show.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We heard, did you guys, after the election, I heard three separate people. We were just in Denver doing a show, part of our tour. Three separate people, one person on Facebook, one person via email, one person on the phone, told me that, there goes, you can tell there goes the country. Since Obama's been elected, we've been attacked by a drone was attacked by Iran or something like that. And that the stock market is also crashing. And it's like, wait, so you're saying the day after the election, Obama's already ruined the country and we've already been attacked by another country because Obama was elected. And three separate people told me the exact same thing. And I was like, oh, wait a second. Bill O'Reilly must have said this last night.
That's to your point of the critical thinking skills. A lot of people just don't understand the difference.
Well, even if it's not something that you're able to or have the desire to incorporate into your own personal practice, just being aware of the idea of it so that when you hear those three people say that, you can say, oh, really? Where'd you hear that from? And who do you think is runs his bankroll?
Right. Well, what's so scary is so many people form definitive, solid, concrete opinions before they have all the information. They get the information that they want, and then they're done. They build up a defense system to refute anything that challenges their belief. You know, I did a gig last year at a college, and in a theater full of college freshmen, I'm sure every one of them had an opinion on the abortion issue, but not one single student knew what Roe versus Wade was.
Wow.
In a college in the United States, California.
I heard one of you telling a joke about how these people, you know, a lot of Christians, ardently believe in a book they've never read.
Yeah, that's Ian's great line, yeah.
Well, it's absolutely funny though. Like, that joke gets extended to the fact that not only do they want to argue about their book, which I think is amazing. What I think is amazing to me is that not only have most people never read it, this is the one thing that they say their eternal life, the rest of eternity depends on whether or not they have the correct information and whether they're believing the right information, the right book, the right religion. Yet on this information, they're relying, which let's not even talk about the book and how old the oldest original is, and was that oral translation? Was that completely made up by Saul? Was that made up by somebody else? Was it changed at Nicaea? All of that sort of stuff. You throw all that stuff away and just say, okay, this book is the word of God. Yet you're still taking some random preacher or priest's cliff noted versions of his interpretation, and then a paraphrase of that. Because most people, right, they give, you know, it's like they haven't read the Bible, but they can give you 100 different quotes. You know, Jesus said, thou shall not look at that thou person that way. And you're like, well, that's not exactly what it says. Well, that's what my preacher says it says. And it's like most people don't realize that half these people who are preachers or priests or whatever, you know, your denomination calls them, they're just normal people. And a lot of them, I would say, are you know, really average people, where if they didn't have a church, they'd be working at Target. Like, you know what I mean? They're just normal. So what, and he probably hasn't even read the Bible fully. That guy's been grew up and was told the same thing in the church that you were. So you're listening to a guy who is regurgitating paraphrased cliff notes of a book that he has never read. And you're taking that and using that for the basis of your eternal life. That's to me is like, it's absolutely crazy. And then you get into an argument with them about something else like evolution. And we're supposed to expect that they actually understand that field of study when they haven't even read one book. You know what I mean? It's like, it's crazy. It's like, and these people want to argue with you, you know, to the end about something that and they haven't even read their own damn book. So it's like, I know they haven't read anything. I know they haven't gone to college for anthropology.
But
so
they all there is to know about carbon dating.
All of Genesis, whatever it says.
Yeah. I always get like my friends and cousins that will be like, just quote some, you know, oh, the Lord said this, you need to read, you know, Revelation. They, you know, you need to read this, you need to say that. And it's like, you're just picking these one or two phrases, and you give them any other quote, you know, you give them close your eyes and throw a dead cat at Leviticus, and you can find, you know, God murdering or raping somebody. And like, but oh well, that doesn't count. But
just John 3:16. Ignore all that.
Right, exactly.
We had 40 some percent of the people in this country just voted for a guy who is a member of a religion that believes black people are cursed with the mark of Cain forever. 40% of the people in the country just voted for somebody who believes in that. Never mind the fact that the founder of the religion was a known con artist and swindler, and these plates that he came back with, he just happened to lose them and doesn't know where they are. But just ignore all of that, and let's just go with what makes us feel safe.
That's scary.
Exactly. Not safe, it's scary.
I wish Obama would have played on that belief of being marked with, you know, the mark of Cain a little bit. Like maybe during one of the debates, he could have had some sort of physical mark.
You could say that would have been great. But, well, good thing it's we're after 1978. Otherwise, I wouldn't even be accepted as a human, basically, on your... Yeah, I mean, seriously, were we going to have somebody to run the United States of America who came from the planet Kolob and wears magic underwear? I can't believe that. That's like, you know, I mean, it's just, it seems, and that's the funny thing about which I think is cool about our show, is that we don't just go after religion. We try to go after, you know, just like I said, irrational thinking on so many levels. But it's funny because, you know, for the most part, we're obviously liberal people, but not that the people who put themselves in that same side that are also liberal don't believe wacky stuff themselves. I mean, you know, that there's all kinds of beliefs that, you know, from spiritualism to, like, you know, astrology and other stuff that is just as wacky, but people, you know, they'll believe that for whatever reason as well. And I think that's the cool thing about the show, is you get somebody who's laughing for 20 minutes straight about, there's 20 minutes of jokes about Christianity and Islam, and they're laughing with it and they're on your side. And then you say something about, well, let's look, you know, skeptically at alternative medicine, or let's look skeptically at, you know, psychics or ghosts or Bigfoot. And then they'll be like, wait, well, that. And you see everybody else laughing and they realize, oh, wait a second. Maybe this thing I believe in is just as silly and laughable as the stuff that I was just laughing at. And I think that starts to make people, you know, without, you know, getting defensive because they're in a comedy club crowd or a theater, it makes them think a little bit, like, well, wait a second, if I'm laughing hysterically for 20 minutes about this guy's Christian beliefs, and then he's laughing hysterically for 20 minutes about my belief in Bigfoot, well, maybe, you know, these are the same thing.
Sure.
You know, and it's not confrontational so much. It's because it's done in humor.
Exactly. Bigfoot is Jesus.
That's it.
Yeah. That actually would explain a lot.
Why no one's ever seen him.
Yeah, why he wears sandals.
So you guys have a special show coming up with December 21st. You'll be performing live from the apocalypse. I'm pretty excited about that personally.
Yeah, that's my thing.
That's Ian's special. It won't be it is an evolution of comedy show, but it's Ian's special, and unfortunately, I have a different engagement to be at that day. It's sad.
You'll be busy being raptured that day. Is that what's happening?
I'm just doing another gig.
he'll be finishing his bunker.
Because there's so many apocalypses to choose from.
You know, well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's actually why the date got mixed up and I ended up being booked on another thing, is because I thought it was supposed to be over on 12/12, but I guess I was a little dyslexic there. It's actually 12/21. So I guess the world will come for an end for me in Medford, Oregon.
Oh, man. You know, it's funny though, because it was you know, I was working on it. We hadn't had a date set, and I just wanted to do, you know, an hour special that was a lot of comics are atheists or critical thinkers, but, you know, there was so much hype around it, like last year. Oh, we got a year left. People were talking about this Mayan apocalypse, and it was, I think it was crossing over to the spiritual people, because it wasn't Harold Camping, some, you know, religious nut. It was a bunch of people saying, well, the Mayan calendar, and for some reason we like to believe that somebody who lived a long time ago had psychic powers, or, you know, had mandate over the rest of us in as far as, you know, logical thought, like, you know, the founding fathers are infallible and Mayans were psychic and they talked to aliens. And so people were really, you know, talking about this, and I was trying to find a date, and I said, like, in a, you know, well, I said, well, maybe I'll just do it the day the world ends. That way, if the world does end, I don't have to worry about trying to find a distributor.
Win-win.
As a joke, and it was like, wait, that's not a bad idea. just do it on that day and make it a whole theme, you know, that it's like the world's going to end, and if the world doesn't end, we'll go live.
I don't know about you. If I'm going out on the 21st, I want to go out laughing.
Yeah, that's good, Todd, because the joke will be on you.
As soon as they welcome, the world ends and, you know, don't even get to do anything. I think, you know, what a great date to pick to do a show on skepticism. I mean, so many people are absolutely believe this, you know, this stuff for no apparent reason. It's like, so the Mayan calendar ended, which is, that's even debatable, but my calendar ends every December 31st. And you know what I do? I go buy a new one with a new thing on it. You can get one with trains and cars on it. You can get one with puppies and kittens wearing cool little occupational uniforms, and you can get one with naked girls on it or naked guys on it or whatever you're into. It's like, just go get a new one. You don't need to think the world's going to end because there's no more changes in this calendar.
Exactly. You bringing up calendars remind me of, you know, I mean, January 1st, 2000, you know,
oh, yeah.
2000, Y2K. The lights still came on.
Yeah.
Right.
And everything was fine.
Yeah, that was my thing. Like, I thought about, that was one of the things I thought about when doing this special was like, man, imagine if somebody had done what I'm doing now at Y2K. There was so much hype around, you know.
They did. I mean, his name was Prince.
Yeah.
Are the hardware stores going to sell like apocalypse kits?
You know? Oh, duct tape and
get everything apocalyptic ready.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, because that'll help.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Some duct tape.
Put duct tape up the windows in case the world blows up.
Exactly. But I was just thinking, though, like, for Y2K, that was what it was. It was, you got to buy all this new software, all these new, like, little patches and new bits of hardware. Like, what is the thing that they're going to try and market for this? But I guess you're probably right.
Yeah, you better tithe to the church.
Yeah.
I actually thought about this and years ago when I first heard about the Mayan apocalypse. This is, I don't know, 5 years ago or whatever. And I saw websites about it and the world's ending and this is what, you know, this is what's going to happen and all this sort of stuff. I really wanted to, as a joke, I started putting up, you know, bets. I wanted to say, okay, let's, because if you're dumb enough to believe that, maybe you're dumb enough to take a bet where there's no way you can win. But I wanted to take a bet where it's like, look, I'll give you 1,000,000-to-1 odds that the world doesn't end, right? If the world doesn't end, you owe me $1. If the world ends, I owe you $1,000,000. But the world will be ended, so I won't have to pay you anything. But I just wanted to see how many people would take 1,000,000 to 1. Those are great odds.
Right. That's great. Well, have you guys heard of they're offering to take care of people who are getting raptured to take care of their pets? So it's the non-believers are saying, well, I'm still going to be here stuck on Earth and you're going to get raptured, but your pets aren't. So you can pay me to watch your pet.
He hopefully changed it to Spanish and has been marketing heavily in the, you know, Cancun area for them.
Yeah, you know, that is a great idea. I also wanted to see if I could get somebody to sign over their house to me. you won't be here on December 22nd. So as of December 22nd, your house will be mine. That way that, you know, the banks can't take it back. And
Right.
Just, you know, have it signed over to me. And, you know, I don't know. I wonder how many people have done that over, you know, with all like the Harold camping and the Hal Lindsey's and all these people that have tons of followers that, you know, I wonder how many of them have just signed away their,
yeah,
their, you know, and the weird thing is like the Harold Camping followers, he's had 6 apocalyptic claims and none of them have come true. And yet he still has followers and they're most same followers. It's like, he sucks at predicting the end of the world. Quit believing him.
But I guess that'd be kind of a good PR stunt, though, for someone who has sort of enough clout to say, like, put your money where your mouth is and sign over your house, sign over all your personal belongings to me for December 22nd.
Why are these people continuing to pay their mortgage or pay off any credit loans? I mean,
yeah, you've only got a month left.
Yeah, they're never going to evict you in time.
What do you think the Mayan apocalypse is going to look like?
It's going to come in with a mariachi band.
So if you guys were to be able to choose how the world was going to end, what would be your apocalypse of choice?
I believe that it will come with a large ball of fire will come from the east and go overhead and set in the west. And then on the 22nd, the same thing will happen again.
If the world is going to end, for me, it would have to come. Like the worst case scenario ever would be like the world being taken over by giant Ann Coulters, and they would just illogic and whine us to death. That would be the worst one. The best
it would probably involve the Dodgers winning the World Series.
I mean, are you prepared for zombies just in case it's that kind of apocalypse?
Yeah, you know, like I said earlier, I already watched Fox News, so I'm very prepared for zombies. You know, and
should have seen our crowd in Albuquerque. The zombies thing is real.
Yeah, I believe it.
Zombies are real. It's called smoking meth.
I'm kind of open for like an armed horny angels descending upon us and bringing a global orgy of death. I think that would be.
And just, yeah. I don't know that orgy and
I've
death.
I've never heard orgy
work.
And death ever mixed together. That
is Todd in a nutshell.
Necrophilia Festival 2012.
Neckfest.
Neckfest.
So you guys, when you tour right now, do you do a lot of college towns? Like, can you give us sort of you got your finger on the pulse of what's the generation? What's that generation like? Do we have reason to be hopeful? And I'll tell you right now, Todd likes to hear good news. So
here's what I've noticed is that in my 20 years of doing comedy, I always think the college crowds, maybe they're just a little bit naive, but you always think, oh, this is a smart, educated crowd. Wrong, first of all. So that's just historically, maybe it's younger kids. They haven't, they're, you know, maybe it's the PC thing, but I find that they're not quite as smart and educated as I would like. However, I've been reading a lot lately where I just read last week that one in three kids between 18 and 22, one in three now consider themselves agnostic or atheist. That's pretty amazing that it's like we're getting more and more younger people coming out because of the theme of our show. And and I don't necessarily say at colleges, but like in bigger cities, I mean, all you have to do is look at the electoral map. And then look at the specific one. We're not even just the states that went blue or but the cities. And it's like, you know, the population in the cities, the places that have industry, places that have the highest level of education are across the board, you know, being far more secular. And there's far more critical thinking going on. So I think, you know, whether it's, that's necessarily specifically colleges, but definitely college-aged kids in cities where you know there's culture. It's right. Really we're getting a lot. There's a lot more than we would have 10 years ago.
I'd like to speak. To speak to this. I also in addition to all my shows, I also have two teenage kids myself. A 19-year-old freshman in college, and my daughter's 15. But she's a spectacular student. She just took the blue ribbon in the state of California for an FFA Future Farmers speech that she gave. One thing I'll say, even though my kids are growing up with a lot of Christian influence from the mother's side, that generation, not just my kids, but their friends and also a lot of the younger people that I meet after shows, regardless of their own beliefs, they certainly seem to be much more accepting of other people's beliefs. Now, I hope that's not something that'll wear off as they maybe grow older in life and get more frustrated with altering views. I don't know if that happens, if it's maybe just young people in general more accepting, or if there's a trend to people just being more accepting of other people's beliefs. So I feel positive in that way. They seem to genuinely care about the goodwill of other people, and instead of just, you know, spouting scripture at you.
I think we're starting to see more skepticism in general. I think we're definitely seeing more or less religiosity. I mean, specifically when it comes to the, you know, the main, you know, religion and fundamentalism, we're definitely seeing a lot less of that. My only fear is that it's shifting to something that is, you know, a different irrational belief, like where people are going, yeah, that's a bunch of crap, but, and then they go with something on the far other side of the spectrum that's just as
equally craptacular.
Exactly. And I think overall we're seeing, you know, more skepticism. But I think a lot of the, like I said, the less religiosity we see is being transferred to something else, you know, not completely, but a bit of it. So, but I think Jason's right. That people are definitely far more accepting now of your beliefs, and they're far more willing to listen and have an actual discussion.
Right.
As long as your beliefs aren't something, you know, outrageous, like legitimate rape or something like that. You have to draw the line somewhere.
Yes, you do.
Incidentally, since I brought that up in order to do this line, just hypothetically speaking, let's pretend that a woman's body truly does have the ability to recognize a rapist sperm and shut down and defend itself against such an evil atrocity. Let's pretend that was true. It would have to be a change that's taken place within the human body fairly recently. You know, sometime, well, real recently. It must have had to have been at least since, you know, the Holy Crusades and Mr. Cortez down there, when Christianity was actually spread through rape. So it is therefore undeniable proof of evolution.
Yeah, exactly. That can't be both true and evolution be false.
At the same time. You gotta pick one or the other. So thank you for making our ridiculous argument.
But man, that's pretty impressive to me that a lot of people. I mean, you know, we've heard a lot of jokes and stuff about during the election about how can you be 3 days out and have these two completely opposite people and still say you're undecided. Like, what have you not heard yet to let you know where these guys stand on the issue? And how do you not know where you stand on basic issues? But it was pretty interesting when you see a lot of these places that were locked up on, like, the senator, or for a congressional run or even, you know, gubernatorial races, where you think it was locked up. And the guy makes like the Murdoch or Aiken makes some ridiculous comment, and it actually swayed voters away from him, which that's encouraging, because so many people I talk to, it's like, you know, you could show them, you know, when George Bush or whatever, or even Mitt Romney, you could, you know, show them crazy pictures of this guy, you know, murdering people, and they'd be like, yeah, well, I still like him. You know what I mean? Like, most people are so set in their ways. That it was amazing to me to see people in heavily, you know, like with Todd Aiken or whatever, that just to actually turn away, like women coming out and voting and going against what the polls said they were going to do because of his ridiculous comments. That's really encouraging.
Yeah, that's the beauty of freedom of speech. And not only does everybody have a voice to speak with, but the idiots also, let them talk. Let them expose themselves for what they are.
Yep.
Aiken legitimately raped his political career with that comment.
And it turns out that women's bodies did shut down and didn't accept his nomination too. So I guess that was pretty impressive to me to actually see people not just stick to whatever their, you know, religiously stick to their party to actually change their vote. And when somebody does something stupid or says something ridiculous, like I know so many people that I talk to, and it's like, there's no way you can ever change their mind. period. I mean, you can't, no matter what their candidate does, if their candidate is of the side that they're registered to vote, no, they're not changing their opinion. That's crazy.
Some of that may also be, unfortunately, I still think there's a lot of women in this country that have to go along with what their husband's saying at the cocktail party. But once you get behind the voting curtain, that's her opportunity to say, you know what, screw you, asshole.
Right.
And props and bravo to them for doing that.
Sure, I agree. And if it is people changing their mind, it's enlightening to now know, like, what is that tipping point? How bad does it have to get before they do change their mind? And it's good to know that such a point exists. It's scary to realize just how bad it has to be.
Yeah, it exists in 1954. That's why we're talking about these issues.
Exactly. So, Jason and Ian, is there a little piece of your show that the two of you could do for us right here, or can we play a little soundbite or clip from it on our show? What's that? We're in it. We're doing it.
but I do a bit about just a theory, and I go, I love how people say just a theory, because let's look at some other things that are just theories. We have relativity is just a theory, gravity is just a theory, germ theory is just a theory, plate tectonics. Just a theory. So if you ever say the phrase just a theory, I would say that you either don't know the meaning of the word theory or you don't know the meaning of the word just. You know, and then because like you think about another thing, you know, it's, oh, don't worry about that thing down there. That's not going to hurt you. It's just a great white shark, you know. Oh, condom? Nah, it's just AIDS. You know, you wouldn't say those sort of thing. And it's funny when, you know, you get to this point, I get to a point in the act where I go, well, look, how do people like to say that they know something? We actually had one of our cop, Maurice, was on a show last night and arguing with a guy who called himself a skeptic, but he was like a religious skeptic, and they were arguing about the word no. Well, you can't know something unless this happens, and you can only know it through this, and you can't know it through science. You can, you know, all this sort of stuff. And I find that Christians use that word no a lot, and they like to say, oh, I know this, and through Jesus I know. And you try to argue with them, you go, no, you believe. And they go, no, I know. And you go, no, you believe. And you go, no, I know. And it's like, I don't think you know what the word no means. You know what I mean? And I said, how can I explain it to you? I can't say that I know you're an idiot. That is just a theory. But yeah, that's my entire act pretty much, is that sort of a, you know, I love recounting conversations between myself and my Christian friends.
I'm a ranter. I rant. I take something and I just beat the hell out of it and expose it for all that it is and the ridiculous in the ridiculousness. I tackle the healthcare issue. I spend about 15 minutes of my show is around the education system. I'm qualified to talk about this because I was a spelling bee champion at Alternative Continuation High School, which will tell you that when you see that on the top part of your resume, that I can spell way better than pregnant chicks, drug dealers. But the drug dealers were really good at fractions, but I'm not teaching them. So...
metric system extremely well.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. That's what I go. And also stuff in the media, you know, the media falsities, false reporting. Media is entertainment is another favorite topic of mine.
The one thing I like, Jason has a great bit about the one about the observation about the ticker tape, I think is pretty funny.
Oh, well, the morning after Election Day, I was in the airport, as we often are on Wednesday mornings. And, of course, you know, all the election coverage at the airport on the news screens there above the bar. Of course, the TVs are all muted. You know, it's in the airport, but it had three screens back to back. It started out on the far left. He had Fox News, and then he had CNN in the middle, and MSNBC was to the right. It just, you know, got a little progressively better. I couldn't help but notice with the three screens back to back to back, the news ticker that rolls at the bottom of the screen on the Fox network, it rolls at approximately 1/3 the speed of the other channels, thus giving their viewers more time to sound shit out, apparently. That is honest. There's no comedy writing involved there. That was just an observation.
That's great.
I have this thing, and I've only told this to a couple people because I'm keeping it kind of down because I've never done it on stage, and the only time I do it on stage is going to be for my special. But I don't mind giving a little preview, but this is actually a real conversation. This is how I plan on ending my special. Again, never done it on stage. I'm only going to do it on stage one time. And that is this. I was driving around in my car with my daughter, who's now 7 at the time she was 6. And she says, you know, I was talking to my friend on the phone about the show and some material I'm doing. And I told him, I said, I always wanted to do a bit on Original Sin, you know, and we were just talking about that. And I hung up. My daughter said, Dad, what's Original Sin? And I was like, well, I realized that she hasn't read the Bible. She doesn't even know anything about it much, you know? So she has no idea what I'm talking about. So I said, well, how can I explain it to you? I said, if I try to explain it to you, you're not really going to know the references because you don't really know all the rest of the characters in the book. And I said, let me just give you an analogy. And I said, you know how your mom, you know, and I always tell you not to put your fingers in your food? She goes, yeah. I said, well, what if I told you that if you put your fingers in your food, again, I'm going to just start punching people in the face for the rest of my life because you to punish them for you putting your fingers in your food. And she's like, what? And I said, well, so, and then you go on, you put your fingers in your food. And I said, I warned you. And then I just start walking around, just punching people in the face. And they're going, why are you punching me in the face? And I said, well, my daughter put her fingers in her food and this is justice. And I just wander around, punching people in the face. I said, and then after a million years or a few thousand, depending on whose book you read, I realize, well, I might be being a tad bit irrational. So I decide to have another son and punch him in the face, so that I don't have to punch anybody else in the face. And then I walk around with this little kid and I just punch it in the face. And I go up to people, I go, hey, I'm punching this kid in the face so that I don't have to punch you in the face. And people go, why would you have to punch me in the face? I go, because my daughter put her fingers in her food. It's just the way it is. And my daughter goes, Dad, stop kidding around. Can you tell me the real story? I want to know what it says. And I said, fine. Okay. In the Bible, God creates these two people. There's Adam and Eve. And he says, don't eat from the fruit on this tree, this fruit of knowledge, because if you learn something, that would be bad. And then a talking snake comes up to the girl, Eve, and he says, don't listen to that guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Go ahead and eat the fruit. So she eats the fruit. And then God says, well, I warned you. So now I'm going to burn people in hell for all eternity because you ate some fruit. And then after a million years or a few thousand, depending on whose book you've listened to, God says, I might be being a tad bit irrational. So he has another son and murders him. And then he tells people, hey, I murdered this son so that you don't have to burn for all eternity because this person ate a piece of fruit. And my daughter starts laughing her ass off in the back of the car. And then she gets angry and she goes, Daddy, knock it off. Thought to myself, that's the appropriate response to that story. I mean, it's just funny to me. It's like a six-year-old, because her dad's a comedian, she thinks, I must obviously be making up this ridiculous story to make her laugh. Because no way in hell would anyone ever believe that.
Right.
Just blatantly obvious to a six-year-old. Dad, quit goofing around. Tell me what really happened. And I was, yeah, that's a good response. I'm glad you're my kid.
Right.
For us to get our kids to take us seriously.
That's for sure. Especially when you're giving them Bible verses.
So you guys recently did a few shows in the free thought circuit, if you will, you know, playing a couple of the free thought conventions and things like that. So tell me, what was that experience like for you guys?
It's so nice to do. We just did the Secular Student Alliance at University of Colorado Springs. And same thing. It's like when you get a crowd that's there because they actually want to see what you have to say or hear what you have to say. It's so much nicer than going to a regular comedy club and trying to win people over who might hate everything about you, you know?
Do you have like a litmus test, like a, what's your tester joke to sort of feel out the crowd? Or at what point do you know, like, oh, this is not going to be good?
You know, for me, like, I think Jason and I both do, you know, Jason's really good because his stuff is political, but he it's disguised almost or delivered through, you know, stories and rants and a lot of times there's a political message within a story about his family. So you listen to a story about his family and people are relating to him. They're like, oh, my kid's like that. Oh, I got a kid like that. Oh, I remember going to that school. And then it turns into this political ideology and it gets people to go along with them, even if they don't necessarily, you know, believe in this, you know, the same way he does.
It makes it more believable because they're like, yes, I've been down that road. I saw that broken down truck. I turned left there. I turned, made the next right. And I arrived. I didn't realize where we've arrived, but yes, we have arrived here.
Yeah. And for me, it's like, I'll be going along great. And then if I get to like one joke that always is a litmus test is I say, I was at the bookstore the other day and I saw there was a book in there called Christianity for Dummies. And I thought to myself, oh, the irony. And if that doesn't get a response, then I may be in the wrong crowd.
Yep. Yep.
They stare at me blankly when I mention Roe v. Wade. Then I know I'm at a college gig.
You switch to something that's easier for people to process, like genital jokes.
No, actually, what I did is I somewhat stopped down the show. It was too much of an abomination for me to not point out the you know, pink elephant or whatever you want to call it in the room. And I actually looked at the professors who were also in the room, and they all had looks of shame on their face, as well they should have. I mean, you know, well, not really them. They probably should have known this stuff by the time they got out of high school. But when you've got, you know, people trying to keep us from teaching any kind of sex education in the class, it's you know, and it's not surprising that a college student wouldn't know what Roe v. Wade is. I mean, it's been 39 years ago now.
I guess you're right. If it's absence only, there's no need to learn about any of the repercussions.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and we know that works.
I just learned in North Carolina, I guess, yesterday, one of the legislatures proposed that there be included in the student education a requirement to teach them about the health risks of abortion. And of course, this is coming from a guy who's opposed to teaching the health risks of failing to use a condom.
Yeah. It's about the health risk of 18 years of child support. How about
or raising an unwanted kid in an overcrowded, overpopulated world, you know, with I mean, there are a ton of messed up kids from families that wanted them. It's like we don't need a bunch more out there that that's such a non-issue, but yet so many people, you know, when it comes to politics, I mean, we there's no way that, in my opinion, that I can ever see any sort of logical Supreme Court is ever going to interpret the Constitution that to make abortion illegal, but yet so many people vote on those. I mean, I know tons of people personally that will vote only on the abortion issue, even if every other issue that the candidate they're voting for is completely detrimental to their way of life. They will vote on the abortion issue, even though they're never going to have an abortion. They're probably never going to know anybody that has an abortion, and an abortion is never going to affect their lives in any way. It's like the gay marriage thing.
Right.
It's never going to affect your life. So why the hell do you care? How does it affect you in any way? And if you really think that your God is going to, you know, sort them all out later, then why are you trying to play God? Why are you trying to do your God's work? Let your God burn them in hell like you want. And we can deal and they can deal with that when they die. It's like, why are you trying to stop them from the inevitable? If you believe in God anyway, it's ridiculous. It's such a weird, power hungry, you know, like I don't even know. It's some sort of strange psychosis that people have. Like, why do they need to stop people from doing stuff that has nothing to do with with them. They don't believe in
religion. It's making me grind my teeth thinking about
it. Well, and if it's because you say you're concerned for our well-being, then at least let us be happy, because it's going to happen no matter what when we die. Anyway, we're going to hell. That's what you believe. Let us have the life that we want while we're here.
Yeah, and you see these billboards all over. You know, they think they're so afraid of them aborting the child that's going to grow up to cure cancer. What difference does it make? These same people don't even want anyone to have health care. Yeah. So what's
it's incredible to me. It's like it's perplexing that anyone can think that way. I don't.
A brick Bible was mentioned earlier. I think brick heads is what it is.
And for those who don't know, the brick Bible is basically an atheist redid the Bible, but as a comic using photos of Legos as action figures. And he said he tried to keep it as close as possible to what the message is. He obviously had to summarize. So, you know, there's going to be some people are going to argue, ooh, you took it out of context, or ooh, you paraphrased wrong. But when you look at it, no, it's pretty spot on. It's right. People making comments like, oh, I bought this for my kids because it was a Bible, which I want them to know, and Legos, which they love. But it was blood and rape and warfare and killing. And this is just awful. This is not appropriate for children. Like, okay, then go get the non-animated version. That's much better.
You know what else isn't appropriate for children? Religion. it's so funny. It's like that goes to what I was saying earlier. Like, you just shows that they haven't even read their own book. Like, I mean, all of that stuff is in there. Every time I've had so many people, I will throw out a quote and people be like, well, show me where that's in the Bible. Right here. Okay. Well, and then that's the other thing. If the Bible, you know, I think actually in Letter to a Christian Nation, Sam Harris said specifically, he would say it's either the Bible is either the word of God or it's not. And it's like, yeah, it's either the and if it's the word of God, then everything in it is non-interpretable. It's either the word of God and God said these things are such, period, or it isn't, and therefore we can interpret it however we want. And if it isn't, who the hell cares about it? Might as well use Aesop's fables. I mean, if it's not the word of God, why do I give two craps about it? And if it is the word of God, then why aren't you stoning yourself to death for watching TV on Saturday or Sunday or Monday or Friday, depending on which religion you chose to stoning
your shaving.
Right. You know, it's like, it's crazy to me. It's that how you can, if you believe this, you either have to believe it wholeheartedly. And if you can choose what to believe, then that just says to me that you're creating your own religion. You're making up your own. You're not following what the Bible says. You're following what you want to believe. So why even call yourself a Christian? You know, if you say, oh, I'm a Catholic, but I don't do these things and I don't listen to the Pope and I wear a condom and I got a divorce, then guess what, dude, you're not a Catholic, because that's part of Catholicism. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's I don't think I'm ever going to understand those people.
Well,
those people.
The thing, though, that I guess that leads me to say is thank the two of you. Thank you guys for doing what you do, because every day, knowing what you know about the world and about logic and your beliefs and how hard it is to be heard and to have a rational conversation, you guys still do what you do, and you use a great tool, which is humor, and we need more people like you. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. And thank you very much.
And likewise, everything from you know, this activism is what, to in my opinion, activism is, without being, you know, arrogant and trying to force, you know, which I don't think most people in any of our situation would do, but just, you know, activism in the sense of getting out and spreading knowledge and talking with people and having and letting people come to their own conclusions by asking them questions that they have to then ask themselves, and being out there and being nice, normal members of society is what's slowly changing people's minds and getting people to think about stuff. And that's, I mean, the effort you guys are doing here and the whole humanist organization, I mean, the whole movement of humanism is doing that as well. It's showing that it's not just necessarily one you know, yeah, we don't believe in God, but also we are also good people.
Yeah, we need rebels so that everybody doesn't continually just fall into the group and go along generation after generation. You know, more and more people have to stand up and say, just like you mentioned your advertisement, don't believe in God. Well, you're not alone. You know, it doesn't make you an evil person.
Right.
You know, any more than being a tall person makes you an evil person.
No, oh no, that absolutely does. No, we actually do believe that.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining the show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So that was Ian Harris and Jason Ressler of the Evolution of Comedy Tour, which you can check out. And also be sure to check out Ian Harris's Live from the Apocalypse on December 21st in L.A. And if you're not in L.A., Ian said he is actively working on getting that signed up. So it will very likely be on a television channel or on Sirius XM. So we will keep you posted when it's announced where that will be playing live. So bring in the apocalypse in style.
For sure. So you can learn more and you can watch a little promo of the Evolution of Comedy at theevolutionofcomedy.com. And of course, we'll have links to that website and to the Facebook pages and YouTube channels for both Jason and Ian and Maurice. We'll give him some love too, even though he wasn't able to be with us today.
Yeah, and you can check them all out on Comedy Central, and they have CDs and specials, and they're on Raw Dog Radio on Sirius XM. So they're all over the place. Check them out.
Cool. Well, Todd, I guess that about wraps up our show for this month. Thanks for talking with me once again.
Indeed. Fun times, and I'm looking forward to next month's show.
And listeners, don't forget thehumanisthour.org. You can get all those links for the shows on the show that we mentioned today. You can read our archives, listen to our archives. You can like us on Facebook. Lots of good stuff. You can subscribe to our RSS feed. Basically, it's all things related to Jess and Todd. Probably more of us than you would ever want to know.
Indeed. Well, thanks, Jess. Talk to you again next month.
All right, Todd. Thanks.